some reason, whenever I'm the one that give the vada, I'm always told at the last minute. So I didn't have time to give great thought to this, but I figured I'd talk a little bit to take away from Chanukah, being that Chanukah is just departed from us, great Yontif of Chanukah, so something that we could take from it. So it struck me a number of years ago, if you look in the Medrash Rabbah, in the very beginning of Bereshis, so it says that the second pasuk, it says, V'ha'aretz ha'isasol v'vol v'choshech al p'nei sahom. Speaking about Pshuta, the way the world was when it was created, that the world was so vavo, was empty. Choshech al p'nei sahom. So the Chazal and the Medrash interpret that this is these adjectives are describing the different goliaths, the various exiles that the Jewish people would be in. And when it says choshech al p'nei sahom, that this refers to the matzav of Yavan, of Greece, that Yavan was hichshech einam shel Yisrael, the Chazal say, that they made kuzeres against the Klal Yisrael, and they darkened the eyes of the Klal, took the light out of the eyes of Klal Yisrael. So says the Medrash. So it struck me just a thought years ago, a number of years ago, it struck me that it's like so interesting that a period of time that the world considers to be the greatest enlightenment, right, in human civilization, from the Bria Olam or whatever people think happened at the beginning, until then there was nothing, right? There was no culture, there was no meaningful culture in the world, right? Because the Goyim didn't know about the Torah, and came along Greece, and to Adayom Hazeh, Greece is referred to as a big, the Malchus Yavan is referred to a big turning point in the history of the world, the history of civilization. And yet, the Chazal referred to it as Choshech al Pnei Sahom. So what I thought, the message here, that what this brings out, something that a little bit you have to take away from Chanukah, is that when everything is said and done, a Ben Torah has to look at the world differently than everyone else. Which means that not just in terms of halacha, that, okay, you know, we put on tefillin and the goyim don't. Okay, we're makbid on lashon hara and they aren't. It's not just that. It's that the whole world, the whole outlook on life, what's important, what's not important, even amongst enlightened people, even amongst enlightened goyim, but compared to the hashkafas haTorah, it could be considered choshech. So I think that this is an important thing to talk about, the idea that a Ben Torah really has to have a certain gvura, a certain ability to look at the world and see things with, the person has to use Midas HaEmes in a very big way, and to see through, to determine what's really important and what's not. You know, remember, the Shiva Zatzal used to say over every year, not every year, but a number of times when it came Pasha Shlach, so you have by the Meraglim, so it says there that, it says one of the reports that they gave about the land of Canaan was that they said it's Eretz Ocheles Yoshvehi, that this is a very difficult place. It's a land which eats up its inhabitants, that it's a very dangerous place to live. Why did they say that? So Rashi mentions that, according to the Chazal, because everywhere that they went, everywhere the Meraglim went, there were funerals taking place. A disproportionate number of funerals. So they couldn't understand. There's funerals all over the place. So how could it be? Must be that this land is just a very difficult, impossible place to live. And Memela, people are dying all left and right. So Rashi says that, but Vakosh Baruch Hu also Latova, that Hashem did it for a bikavana, for a good reason. This was something that wasn't typical. This is happening in order that the Meraglim shouldn't be detected, because the Meraglim, being that they weren't natural Egyptians, so therefore they had a different appearance, and it would have been noticed that what are these strangers doing here? But because people were so caught up in their kvura, sameis, which is a very emotionally consuming activity, so mamela, their minds were totally preoccupied, they didn't notice. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu Asa L'Tov, that's what Rashi says. So Shiva Zatzal, he said, that's great, because we all have the Rashi, but how could you have a tain on the Meraglim? In other words, so good, so they didn't have the Rashi. They didn't know the explanation. So the Meraglim were blamed for every one of these things that they said. There was a tain on them. How could you say such a thing? Right? So what do you mean? What else should they have thought? So he said that the pshat is that what Rashi must mean is that, in other words, a person who's a ben Torah has to have a certain midas habitachon, and the midas habitachon has to make it that he has to reinterpret things that are happening right in front of his eyes. He can't be the pashup shat. In other words, of course, you're right. The pashup shat is that everyone's dying because it's a dangerous place, but that can't be because, after all, the Baruch Shalom is planning on taking us into this place. So must be that they should have been, it was a tain on them, they should have been mechavin to this Rashi. I never would have been mechavin to that Rashi. In other words, I know the Rashi because I learned the Rashi a million times. So therefore, every time, they didn't know that. The Teretz is that a person who is a Ben Torah has to have a different outlook. You have to have a different outlook. In that case, it's an outlook that's based on bitachon. But it extends to a lot of areas. And it extends to a lot of areas because, you know, the Svarim say in Yeshiva, you know, there's very heavy emphasis on Musar, so they don't quote the quote-unquote Svarim, right? You go in other Yeshivas, you hear about the Svarim HaKadoshim, right? What are the Svarim HaKadoshim? We don't know, but they're definitely out there, right? The Svarim HaKadoshim, right, they're a holy Svarim that speak mystical in Yonim. I mean, I'm kidding. So in the Sfarim, in general, there is an attitude that it's a Kabbalistic, I think, idea, but it's Pashit, that the world is referred to, the Alma says, referred to Alma de Shikra. Alma de Shikra means that it's a world of falsehood, meaning that there's a lot of Sheker that's out there, and not just the obvious Sheker. In other words, not just someone will tell you 1 + 1 = 3. Okay, so thank you. That's total Sheker. Everyone knows that. But there are a lot of things where the Sheker is, it's complicated. And a person has to be able to see through it. In fact, the Alter Slabotka says, once it's in the Aratzaf, and he says that that's the Ikar reason why Hashem gave people Chachma. That the reason why people were given Chachma and such great Chachma was not to shoot rockets to the moon, but rather the purpose was that a person needs tremendous Chachma to be able to see through the Sheker of the world, because the Sheker is complicated. It's very, very complicated. And therefore, you have to be able to see the emes, and that's a very big challenge. It's a very big challenge. So therefore, because people were given that challenge, therefore people had to be given a tremendous measure of das in order to, right. The Alter said that the koach, the ikka koach of the Yetzirah, is that the Yetzirah has the ability to make sheker look like emes. In other words, it's not the Yetzirah's goal is not directly to push a guy to do an avera. That's not that's gassus. That's not the way it works. The way it works is that the Yetzirah convinces a person that for me this is a good thing to do. In other words, the guy, even if the person knows something's wrong, he does it anyway. So why does he do it anyway? Not because he's a bad guy. Usually not. Most often, you have a guy that doesn't care at all. He has no Yerushalayim. Okay, fine, but that's not by us. Right? So why does a person do something wrong? Because he rationalizes it. Because he says that in my situation, whatever, okay, it's not so terrible. If I do in this case, right? So that means that what's happened is that the koach of the sotan is that he took something which is sheker and put a nice tie on it and a nice suit, and all of a sudden it looks good. And it looks like emes. So therefore a person has to, that's what a person needs chachma for. A person needs to be able to see through this and to identify. This is one of the biggest challenges. This is one of the biggest challenges that we have in today's world, because even in the frum world, unfortunately, there's the tremendous inroads of sheker, and a person has to be able to identify. I had an experience this past Shabbos. So I have one of my brothers-in-law, my wife's brother, he's a big guy in Kiev. Happens to be a very big guy in Kiev. And he is he's this campus Kiruv rabbi on Stanford University. Right? Stanford University, in case you don't know, is the number one rated university in this country. And, you know, they're all like, everyone there is like brilliant, you know, the whole place. And so he does Kiruv there. So he called me up, either brilliant or they have good connections. One or the other. So anyway, probably more of them have good connections than whatever. But whatever the case may be. Anyway, so Lemaisa, so he called me a few weeks ago that he has one of his Talmidim that's coming to Miami for Shabbos. We have him for Shabbos. I said, fine, I wasn't thinking. And I didn't realize the Shabbos Chanukah, the one Shabbos I'm off. And but okay, fine, you know. So I figured I was looking forward to a nice, quiet Shabbos, and now I already have to be on. Anyway, Lamaisa, this fellow comes. His first name is Bradley. Maybe the guys who here davened here Shabbos morning met him, and he introduced himself. That's his first name. And amazing guy, mamish amazing guy. And he's talking to me, and I saw right away that this fellow has learned quite a bit. And now he never went to yeshiva a day in his life, and. He wasn't from until he didn't keep Shabbos until 6 months ago, but he's sitting in my house discussing intricate halacha with me, and you know, asking me all kinds of shilas and different things, and a lot of yiras shamayim. Okay, it's still a nice amount of stuff that he doesn't know, but what he knew, he really was kona and medactic and everything, mamish everything, and to whatever degree. So anyway, so I figured over Shabbos I'll give him a little tour in the neighborhood. So Friday night, we davened in one shul. Shabbos morning, we went to, we davened here in the yeshiva. And then when it came Shabbos to Meir, I'll show some how Shabbos to Meir, so I decided that I would take him to get the whole experience. So I took him to a different shul. And no offense to the people in that shul, but it was a type of place, a very frum place, you know, whatever. And but the type of place where, you know, they're looking at him like, you know, who's this guy? Like, he's a Martian, you know. He's a Martian. Meanwhile, the chazan gets up to daven Ma'ariv Fidamid, and he's looking around, you know, while he's davening, because he's used to davening. He takes it for granted. He's spacing out. He's looking around. And this guy is sitting there, this Stanford University Talmud is sitting there davening mamish with every word. He's pointing in the sitter, and he's saying every single word. And I was thinking to myself, so who's on a higher Madrega? Who's on a higher Madrega? You know, Velvel over here, who's been from for his whole life, and you know, he's so good at davening Ma'ariv that he could even daven Ma'ariv while he's looking around and checking his email. Okay, he couldn't that time, you know, because Motzei Shabbos. But you know, that's how good he is at davening Ma'ariv. And here, this fellow who 6 months ago was Ochel Nevelus Beferhesia, you know, right now is sitting and davening. So who's on a higher Madrega, right? So this guy. My good buddy Bradley, there's no question about it. It's on high Madrega, right? But the world doesn't see it that way, right? Because the world doesn't see it that way. Because the university, you know, by uns and alte heim, you know, we knew how to eat a piece of Lakshmkugel, and that's it. And don't tell me about the, you know, okay. So this is, but my point is that a person has to have a certain ability to see the world a certain way, and that's one of the very big challenges of a Ben Torah. It's a very, very big challenge. A person, you know, the way Hashem created people are very impressed by certain things. Very, very impressed. People are very impressed by wealth. Very, very impressed. Right, a guy walks in with a Rolex watch. Right to him. Right, you do it. Mamish on the floor. The whole deal. Right, and just like Yom Kippur, right, and especially, and oh, and did you hear? He also knows the whole Shas. Yeah, how do you know? Because he learns Daf Yomi at 6:30 in the morning while he's taka checking his email. So Lamaisa. But people are very impressed by this. But you know, and on the other hand, you see a person who doesn't really look. What does he look like? Not so impressive. And this, but you don't know this man could be the biggest tzaddik. This person could be the biggest tzaddik. So it takes gvura, because the way Hashem made people, it's important to know this. In other words, there are certain things, you know, that certain people have a certain presence, you know, just because of the way they look or the way they act, you know, a person with a certain, Trump gets up to speak and, oh, everyone listens, right, to what he has to say. And you have other people like that. It's because by nature, it's not because people are fools. It's because Hashem wired people that way. There's certain things that make an impression on somebody. But Lamaisa, the hallmark of a Ben Torah is a Ben Torah cannot be superficial. A Ben Torah has to be a thinking person. That's a Chiv Gomer. It's a Chiv Gomer. They had a, today there was a presentation, in case you're wondering why none of the Rebbeim were around this afternoon. So there was a presentation being made on addiction by an alumnus of this yeshiva who came in here and made a whole presentation, a very, very nice PowerPoint presentation for over 2 hours to the entire staff about various forms of addictions. So anyway, so naturally, of course, you know, you can't possibly discuss this without discussing the internet. That's, you know, the You know, so he was saying that, you know, one of the effects that they found in secular sources that they found is that this all has made people very superficial. It's made people very superficial because you always have to be doing something. You always have to be sending a message to somebody, talking to somebody. Forget about the priest or something. Forget about that. He wasn't discussing that. He was talking about Stam. Let's say a person Stam addicted to, just checks his phone every 10 seconds to see, you know, anything, news developments, or to see, you know, stock market went up or down, who knows what, whatever it may be, fantasy football, right, who's put on the injured list, right? So the result of it is that a person doesn't have time to think. A person doesn't have any time to think. A person doesn't have any time to reflect, right? And it's a very big chesaron. It's a very big chesaron because it's making people very superficial. That's what they're finding. They're finding that people don't think things through. They don't think things through because you just have to, you know, your mind isn't trained to do that anymore. Your mind is trained to make very quick decisions, quick assessments. And that it's very harmful for a lot of reasons. It's harmful, obviously, because from a learning standpoint, it's very harmful because of the fact that to learn, you have to be able to concentrate on something and you have to try to see more. That's the whole point of learning in Yeshiva Gedolah, right? The whole point of developing lumdus, skills in lumdus, is because of the fact that the Gemara is not supposed to be understood superficially, that there's a great deal of depth in the Gemara that has to be extracted. A person needs skills to be able to do that. But if you're making it that a person is not interested in doing such a thing, his mind is not interested in doing such a thing, right? So it's an avla. It's an avla. A person becomes a very superficial person. But it's not just for learning. It's for life in general. It's for life in general. A person has to be able to see the truth and to the hair. And sometimes you have to work on yourself when you see something happening. Right, when you see something happening, a Ben Torah has to a lot of times interpret it his own way. It's not going to match the interpretation that it says in the New York Times or in the Wall Street Journal. It's not going to match because they're giving you the pashtus. They're giving you the pashtus, or maybe they're even giving you more of an analytical interpretation, but it's not a Torahic interpretation. So a person has to understand that. You see, a lot of times, you know, the age-old question that the Chazals mentioned, you know, Tzadik V'ralo, Rosh V'tovlo, that the Chavos of Ovis, he brings down that this was a question that bothered even the biggest Nevi'im, even Moshe Rabbeinu, right, when he said to Hashem, Hodieni Nostrachecha, right, that's what he wanted to know. He wanted to know ultimately what, I can't understand the way the things go in this world, right? So it's a challenge. The way the world is a challenge, but it's important that a person has to have hashkafas haTorah. A person has to have hashkafas haTorah, and the hashkafas haTorah is not necessarily the hashkafa of, forgive me for saying this, but the hashkafa of frum Jews. In other words, sometimes you have, you know, there's like a frum culture, which is based maybe on good things, obviously based on Torahic things, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to dismiss. But a lot of times, even within that culture, there are ideas that come up that aren't correct, because people, the Torah is kivol machshavosei machshavoseichem, right? The Torah is such a thing that Hashem advertises the Torah that on the label, instead of the, you think when the Surgeon General, right, put out the warning on cigarettes that this was the most incredible thing, right? So on Hashem's Torah, he put also a warning, right? Warning, kivol machshavosei machshavoseichem, just to hear that. That you and I don't think the same way. So therefore, you have to learn the Torah very well and with great depth and analysis to really understand what the Torah wants from a person and how to understand situations, how to process information. It's very easy in the world to get swept away by what's going on and you see it, you know, throughout the history of the Klal Yisrael. This has always been a challenge because there are different movements in the world. You know, when the State of Israel was founded in 1948, so you have to understand a little bit from a historical standpoint. This was just a few years after the world heard the full horrors of the Holocaust. Now, while it was going on, so people knew that there was a lot of bad that was happening that they were aware of, but nobody was aware of the full extent of it, right? They only became aware of the full extent of it when the war ended. when the war ended and whatever survivors there were came out, and everyone's telling their stories, and they're, well, this place and that, but I didn't know there were so many concentration camps, and this and that, and the other thing, and the numbers of how many were killed, they didn't have the number 6 million while it was going on. You know, they knew a lot of the Yidden were being killed, and they knew it was terrible, but nobody dreamt of the worst nightmares, that 6 million people were killed. So it was a very, I mean, I don't know how people were solvable it. But then, in very short order, just a couple years later, this is the most astonishing event that happened since the Churban Beis HaMikdash was the Holocaust. And within three years, the second most astonishing event took place, right? That all of a sudden, you didn't get back Eretz Yisrael. After 1,900 years ago, the Jews took control of Eretz Yisrael. The two most incredible things that happened since the Churban Beis HaMikdash happened within 3 years of each other. So at that time, if you just imagine for a minute what it must have been like, right? So after having been through the emotional horror of deharing the Holocaust, right? So a lot of people, this is it. This is the explanation. How could it be such a thing? Oh, now we have the explanation. This is why Hashem did it. That's it. And okay. But where do you go from there, right? So from there, jump on the bandwagon, that's it. So we'll become Zionistic, we'll back the land, whatever. The founding people are Nanshin Halach, Nanshin Yiddishkeit, most of them, it doesn't matter, but we have, right? So the Chazon Ish, in what I consider one of the most incredible displays of godless. So when they asked the Chazon Ish, how do you explain this? You know, it's very easy now to sit 50, 60 years later and look back and try to say Sfaris. Even now, it's not so easy. But it's much easier than it was then, when it's all going on. It's all going on, and everybody's jumping on the bandwagon. So the Chazon Ish said that, in my humble opinion, he said, this is the last Nisayan that Hashem is giving before Mashiach comes. This is the last Nisayan. Hashem is giving us back Eretz Yisrael, and it's a Nisayan to see what we're going to do with it. In other words, which is a very different outlook than a person who said, that's it, the Geula started. Aschalta the Geula. The Geula started, that's it, pop the champagne. Right? Now, it's much easier to jump on the bandwagon than to think what the Chazon Ish thought. Now, so you would look at him, and imagine if it happened today. You would look at him and say, boy, you're the ultimate killjoy, right? The ultimate Kalta Litvak, right? In other words, a cold-blooded, you don't know what that means, cold-blooded Lithuanian, right? In other words, you have absolutely no warmth in you. This is what you say when such a thing happens in 1,900 years since you didn't have control of even one inch of Eretz Yisrael, and now you got so much of it back, and you have your own government and your own flag and all these things, and that's your reaction? Right, but the terrace is that a person that I'm not getting into who's right. I know there are different opinions, and I'm not necessarily getting involved in that per se. But that is an example, to me, of a person who he's such a bentari, so influenced that it doesn't matter what's going on. He has the gvura to see the world according to his understanding of the Torah. This is what's happening. This is what's happening. Okay, Enoch Hanami, it's a tremendous thing. He would also agree that it's a great moment. But it's a moment that you have to keep your head on. It's a moment that you have to say, all right, before you get carried away, just realize that in all likelihood, this is not Mashiach, it's not the way it was supposed to play out, right? So therefore, probably it's an assignment. Probably it's in the sign, meaning we should be very happy, but now we have a very big achrayus. We have an achrayus to make sure that we handle it the right way. So my point is that this is, I think, one of the messages from when you go away from Hanukkah. This is a very important thing, that Hanukkah was not just about mitzvahs. You know, we focus, you know, the famous vart by Hanukkah, everyone, in case you didn't have a Dvar Torah for Hanukkah to say over, so I'll give you one for next year, right? The most famous Dvar Torah for Hanukkah, right, that there were three mitzvahs that the Greeks came to eradicate, mainly the main three mitzvahs, which were they, Rabbi Say? Which were they? They were Shabbos, Milah, and Rosh Chodesh, right? So the Velt says, so that's the way Hanukkah played out, right? The Hanukkah played out that it's the only yontiv that spans 2 months, so therefore you have Rosh Chodesh in every Hanukkah, right? And you have Shabbos in every Hanukkah, it's 8 days. And you don't have Bris Milah per se, but Bris Milah is 8 days. On the eighth day is the Bris Milah, so Hanukkah is 8 days, right? So that's the significance of the way it played out to be Misak and those. Okay, very nice vart. This is a famous vart that they say over. But the point is like this. So when we think about it, that's a serious part, by the way. I'm making fun of it. That's a serious part. But the point is that when we think about the Yeshua of Hanukkah and what the ultimate Nisayon was, it's much easier to latch on to mitzvahs than it is to latch on to Hashkafas HaTorah. In other words, it's much easier. You see that in the world today. It's much easier. I have a lot of people today have very questionable Hashkafas, but they keep the mitzvahs. And some of them keep the mitzvahs carefully. Yeah, go into a lot of young Israel shul. I don't mean to pick on that type of shul specifically, but a more modern type of shul. And many people, they'll tell you, you ask them, when's the Sofas Man Kriya Shema? First of all, when I was a kid, nobody knew what the Sofas Man Kriya Shema was. Okay, and I'm not that old. Okay, and they don't know the Sofas Man. Now they'll tell, you want the Grozman, the Magen Avraham Zman, which man you want to know, right? And people know, Dikduke mitzvahs, right? I don't even know why they make Hanukkah candles anymore. Nobody lights Hanukkah candles. Everybody lights only the very, very modern people and the yeshiva guys who don't want to buy menorahs because they're going home two nights into Hanukkah, right? So maybe light a couple of candles. But other than that, nobody lights candles. Everybody lights oil, of course. You light oil, right? It's much easier. It's much easier to keep the mitzvahs than it is to have the Hashkafas HaTorah. The Hashkafas HaTorah is something that it's very difficult. Because of the fact that mitzvahs themselves, it's a very interesting thing. Like you have people years ago wondered, you hear stories. Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky had an older brother-in-law whose name was Reb Avram Grudzinski. Reb Avram Grudzinski was the mashgiach in the Slabodka Yeshiva's final after the Alter went to Eretz Yisrael, so he left behind. Right, the Slabodka Yeshiva did not all go to Eretz Yisrael in the 1920s. Right, so most of them, in fact, did not go. But he, the Alter and Moshe Mordechai, the Rosh Yeshiva, went, and the Yeshiva was left with the Alter son-in-law of Isaac Sher, was the Rosh Yeshiva, and Rav Ram Grudzinski was the Mashgiach. When Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, both he and Rabbi Yaakov were married to daughters of the person who was officially the mashgiach in Slobodka. The Alter was not considered the mashgiach in Yeshiva. They had his like Rav Tzvi Hirsch Heller was his name, and he had so these were his sons-in-law. So Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky first came to America, and he sent for his children to come. So his older brother-in-law said to him, I will not let you, it's bad enough that you want to go there, but your sons, because his two older sons, Reb Shmuel, Shlemuel, and Reb Binyamin, were already living in Europe. He said, you're such sons, you're going to take them to America? Forget it. It's going to be a total disaster. He was ready to take them to Din Torah. That he should not send his sons, he should not be allowed to take his sons to America. At that time, people thought that there would be no future for Torah in America whatsoever. So here we are, 80 years later, and you see that there's flourishing Torah and a lot of flourishing Yiddishkeit in America. But the difference is that if you look carefully, what you will see is that there's Limud HaTorah, that there is, the Cheshivas for Limud HaTorah, which is incredible, absolutely incredible, and there is an awareness and a very good practice of mitzvahs. Right? People are good at that. People admit there's sukkahs all over the place. Right? Everyone has a sukkah, there's a pop-up sukkahs. Oh, he's not here, right? Can you ask him, right? All the sukkahs that are sold, right? All the different things. Everybody has to have a sukkah. They have everything online. You can get everything. You go to Zambia for sukkahs, and they'll send you a lulav and kosher food and all these kinds of things. But what's missing is the Hashkafas HaTorah. That's the hardest thing. That's the hardest thing. It's easier to learn and it's easier to keep mitzvahs than it is to have a Torah outlook. A Torah outlook means the way you judge life, what's success? What's success in this world? Right? If you ask a frumi yid, what's success? Talmud Chacham, of course, yeah, sure. And keep the mitzvahs, sure. And what else? Okay, that already, a lot of people check off. So what's next? And, a good parnasa, and a this, and a that, and a nice car, and a nice house. All right, so now already, we have to question. Okay, I'm not saying that it dafka has to be the other way. I'm not saying that. But the question is this a taridik ashkafa? Or is this now the person putting in his own two cents, that this is the way I would like it to be? This is the way I would like it to be. So therefore, I would like to have that. I'd like to have the best of both worlds. See, here there's a lot of confusion. there's a great deal of confusion, even in the Frum Welt. There's a tremendous, at least in American Frum world, maybe in Eretz Yisrael it's different, but in the American Frum community, there's tremendous influence of Gashmias, tremendous amount, right? So you say, where does that come in? That's certainly, I'm not saying that you have to be, you know, destitute. No, I'm not saying that, for sure not. And you know, but at the end of the day, Birchas Hashem Hisashir, right? That it comes from the Rabban Shalom, and the Chazal do say that the Derech HaTorah is to lead a more simplistic life, right? Pass Melach Tochal. You don't take it that that's an extreme statement, but the concept that they're trying to bring out is much more than the literal. The kind they're trying to bring out is you have to stay focused. You have to keep your priorities. You have to remember what's important and lead your life that way. And one of the realities of life, I just want to say this, I'm watching the clock. One of the realities of life, which a lot of people today is one of the great shkarim, one of the greatest manifestations of sheker in this world, is the attitude that you can have everything. The reality is you can't have everything, right? It's very important to understand that in life you have to make trade-offs. You can't, the Gemara, you look and get in the Gemara, goes off from the time Moshe Rabbeinu till the time of the Gemara, I don't remember the number, they're like, it's in the sixth paragraph, there are three people that they identified is Torah Gedul B'Makom Echad, right? That they had greatness and they were Gedolei Hador and Gedolei HaFinance. Right, they're just less than five. I don't remember the exact number. I think it was three. The Gemara declares about one person, whatever. Right, but the idea is that a person has to understand. You can't, you know, we like today the certain attitude that crept into the Frum world. You know, it used to be that you know, I heard from one of the, I mentioned this recently, one of the first people who weren't in a kolo in America. The Kollel movement in America started in the mid to late 1940s. So it started, they had in by us and Chavetz Chaim, and they had in the other yeshivas, or Hutton and Chaim Blinstars, and one of those people told me once that the thinking was that Lamaisa in America, you know, people have the question, how come in Europe they didn't have this? They didn't have Kollel in Europe, and they have in America. So he said the pshat is because in America the standard of living was so high by the average person that the feeling was that you could still function even if you lived substandard because it's still pretty good. In other words, the average American lives on such a good quality of life, such a good standard of living, that if you come down less than that, so you'll pay a person a very meager amount, which is what the original people who weren't in Kollel were paid enough that they could manage just b'tzimtzum mamish, just b'tzimtzum, but if you do that, you'll be fine. I remember Rav Moshe Tzeitz Tzal was saying over, he was one of the first in the Chafetz Chaim Kol. He said that, I mentioned this recently, that when his oldest child was born, so they didn't have money for a crib, so they went over to the dresser of drawers, and they took out a drawer, and they put cushions, they put blankets all around the dresser, and they put the baby in the drawer. Not that they closed the drawer at night, you know, to go to sleep, but they took that, they put the drawer on the floor, that was the crib. That was a crib. They didn't have a crib, and that's why they did it. Fine. Right? Today you have a situation, and of course, a lot of things changed. But today you have a lot of times where people feel, I know cases like this, where people feel that they have to learn what they can learn in Kollel, but they should also have also the Gashmias. In other words, they should also, you know, my first memory, Matt, when I came to Yeshiva in Forest Hills, back in 1980, so one day after the shir, I was standing in the front of the building talking with one of my friends, and a car drives down the block, and the car was very interesting. It was a two-tone car. The front was brown and the back was blue, right? And this was not the style in that time or any time to have a two-tone car. The driver of the car was our own dear Rabbi Ben Zion Chait, founder of the yeshiva, and so it looked comical. So I mentioned the story. So I said to me and my friend, we're both 18 years old, we started, you know, cracking up. What kind of car is that? So I still remember to this day, I remember how he said it. I remember where I was standing. So Rabbi Yehuda Jacobson, the Rosh Yeshiva of Tiferes Yisrael, now was at that time one of the elite chevra in the yeshiva. I remember he gave me a look and he said, it gets him where he wants to go. What's wrong with that? Okay? That's it. I surrender. Okay? I have nothing to say. Okay? But that, you couldn't do that anymore. Because of the fact that there's common attitude that you have to have everything. You have the eggs, you learn, but you also should have a geshmak a gashmi. The world doesn't wait. You could play that game only so long. At a certain point, you have to make a trade. Palgan here could vouch. We were both growing up Yankee fans. So every off season, it would always be, you know, they call now the hot stove league. You know, the baseball is already, no one's playing baseball now still for a while. So what do? So you sit by the hot stove and you talk over the sugyas, right? So you talk over, you're going to make a trade. So there was always a trade that, you know, all the great general managers, frustrated general managers such as myself, would sit and make a trade that they have a great trade for the Yankees, okay? They're going to trade the utility infielder and the three worst relief pitchers and five, minor leaguers who can't hit a curveball, right? And they'll take also the maintenance guy and the vendor from the beer, right? And they'll put them in a package, and in return, they're going to get the best hitter in baseball. And it's a great trade because they're giving 10 and getting back one. So, gavaldige trade, right? This was the trade. Every year had such trades proposed. So even now, I have a couple of them. But this, I always waiting to see how come this trade isn't made. I could tell you the names, but you wouldn't recognize any of them. You know, they could have gotten back who knows what. They could, the big sluggers, the great pitchers, right? So the teretz is pashut, right? The teretz is because in this world, to get something, you have to give something. Right, so no one wants to trade. You give me 10 worthless guys, and you expect me to give you back a superstar? It's geitnisht hazoy, right? It doesn't work like that. You want something back, you got to give something. So it's true about everything. A person has to make a trade-off. And let's face it, a person learns in yeshiva. So yeah, there are other things we could all be doing. Right, we could all be out making more money. Right, no question about it. We could all be out having a good time. Part of building. Part of building not just character, but part of building a good feeling about what you're doing is to feel that I'm sacrificing. It's not an avla. I don't have to be afraid of the S word. Oh my gosh, a sacrifice, right? They haven't had sacrifices since the temple era, right? That's not what it means. A person, when you, the hair that you're sacrificing something, it's not always good. It's not always good to have Torah Gedul of Malkum Echad. Because sometimes if you sacrifice, the learning, I should really learn seriously because I'm giving up a lot. I'm giving up by being here. Right, I could be chach in college. I could be out making money. I could be who knows what. All kinds of ways to make money today. All kinds of different things a person could do. Right, so a person has to understand that it builds spirit sometimes to realize that we're sacrificing. We're fighting the good fight. Here in yeshiva, a person commits to learn a zman. A person commits to learn a year. Whatever it is, you don't have to think. See, it's also a problem today that Baruch Hashem, because the world has gotten people accepting of Torah and the kolo. So guys, I'll learn 10 years. So if I'm learning in 10 years, I don't have to learn so seriously today because I could I got the 9 years and more to go. So I'll get serious another day. Right, a person has to focus, and I think try to realize that rather than sometimes just sitting around and sometimes we get down a little bit or whatever, a person is causing themselves. I'm giving up something because I'm getting something. I'm giving up because I'm getting the best. A person gets a Torah education. A person gets a hashkafas haTorah. It's the hardest thing to get. You walk around this country, you will see shmiras on mitzvahs that they never dreamt of. They have it with chumras, erevin, mikvos, you name it. You go everywhere, every pizza shop is yoshan, and every pizza shop is chol v'yisrael. You can't find one that isn't. You cannot find one that isn't. Wherever you go, right? But where's the hashkafas haTorah? The hashkafas haTorah still is unfortunately, not where it should be, because that's the hardest thing. And that's the could be the defining element of a Ben Torah. Ultimately, that's the defining element. It's not just good he does mitzvahs. You could do mitzvahs. The Ramban says, everyone knows, the Ramban says that the Torah had to write a special pasuk kedoshim to you because it's possible, in his words, that a person could be a novel b'shus ha-Torah, that a person could keep all the mitzvahs and be obnoxious. A person could be a disgusting person. That's what the words mean. You could be a disgusting person. Why? Because there's no system that's perfect. There's no system that the human mind can't think of a way to get around. But what's needed is the spirit of the Torah a person has to have. So that's the fight of Hanukkah was not just a fight for mitzvah. Okay, we have to be able to put on tefillin. Now we're going to do that. Now we're going to put on tefillin. We got to fight to put on tefillin. It's more than that. It's a fight against the culture. It's a fight against a different way of looking at the world. That's what the Chazal say. The choshech al pnei sahom, it's them malchus yavon. Choshech al pnei sahom. You know what that means? That means darkness on the depths of emptiness. Right? That's what it is. That's the way you refer. You go into any university, and they will tell you that that was the beginning of the turning point of all the humanities, all the understanding, all the chakiras of psychology and philosophy, sociology, anthropology, all these things came from them. All the drama, all the architecture, everything came from them. Right? Art, the appreciation of all these things. But after everything's said and done, the Chazal say, but after everything's said and done, what underlied it all was not Hashkafa that we agree with. And for that reason, it's Choshech. So it's just important to realize this. This is why a person has to, it's not just enough to be in yeshiva. A person has to, you have to breathe in the yeshiva. Okay, you have to breathe it in. Because a yeshiva is not just shiurim, and it's not just a difficult gemara, a difficult ksos, or whatever it may be. It's also about developing the hashkafas ha-Torah. It's about a person understanding ultimately how to look at life. Every single person sitting in this room is going to have to make big decisions in your lifetime, and a lot of times you can't always pass it off. I'll call the rav anybody who ever asked a shiloh knows that every shiloh that's asked, it depends how it's asked. Okay, it depends what you emphasize, it depends how you present it. Sometimes the Rav could tell from the way the guy's asking it that I can tell you stories like that. Rav Eliashiv one time, someone in my family texted him a shiloh and he didn't like the answer. So after three times, Rav Eliashiv responded. He said, I could tell that, you know, the guy every time kept thinking of a new dray, why, whatever. So Rav Eliashiv was very perceptive. So he sent back, I could tell that this person doesn't want to hear this answer. So, okay, you want to hear the other answer? I'll tell you that, whatever, I'll tell you how to do it that way. And that's not my first choice, but I'll tell you how to do it. Right? In other words, a lot of times, ultimately, as much as it's important that a person, of course, has to be miyashiv his rebbeim, and a person has to have some sort of a person that he looks up to, he can speak to, but you have to develop your own das Torah. Because if you don't have your own das Torah, you won't ask the questions properly. So what's it going to help you? There are a lot of people who do a lot of messed up things who will tell you which Rav they called and which Rosh Yeshiva they called that told them to do it. So the Pshat is, how'd that happen? It happened because of the fact that he presented the shiloh lopsided. He didn't present it accurately because he was mulling the gears. The person who asked it is not Ruach HaKodesh. So this is the way he asked me the shiloh. This is why I answered it. A person has to develop his own sensitivity and das Torah. And for this reason, a person has to, A, apply himself to learning very much. You don't realize that learning Torah B'iyun, it's not just you understand the sugyas and yavamis very well. You understand everything very well. Rabbi Baruch Barry used to say, as quoted in his name, that he said that a person who learns Torah B'iyun so he can make all the decisions in life very well. They say about the Brisker Rav, that I've heard many people say this, that the people would go all the time to ask the Brisker Rav for advice. So the people to the close to him, the Talmidim, said that he never told anybody what to do. So why did they go to him? So they went to him because he had a tremendous koach of analysis. So he would say, okay, so what's your question? Your question, should you do this or you do that? So he would start like you learn a sugya. He would say, okay, so according to this tzad, A, B, and C, according to this tzad, D, E, and F, right? So then he would go through and he would hack it out, and according to this, and according to that. And by the time he finished, it was perfectly clear. It was perfectly clear what the right decision was. You didn't need him to say anything. He just made it clear. It was obvious. You could see for yourself. But that comes about because a person has a koach ha'iyun, that he's a mevakish ha'emes, and he pushes himself. That's number one. But number two is a person has to learn be'in. He's able to see the truth better. He's able to see the truth through the multidimensional sheker that exists even in the frum world. The sheker, the false values and things which aren't, it's not accurate. It's not right. It's not right. It doesn't matter who the person is. You have to stand up for it. It doesn't matter who said it. If the person's right, he's right. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that you have a big beard and he's some guy who just became from 2 weeks ago. But if he's right, he's right. And that so a person has to learn be'in. But also, a person has to stay in yeshiva. You have to stay in yeshiva and learn, because there ain't no way that in a year or two you could get it. It's not possible, because the kilo machshavos and machshavoseichem takes a long time to deal with. That takes a long time. In other words, yeah, you could. A person, it's possible that a person could pick up a derech halimut in a year or two. That's definitely possible. That's been done. I've seen that. I've definitely seen that. But that a person should think like a bentara. To think like a bentara, you have to be around. You have to shimush tell me the chachamim. A person has to be around. He has to hear. You have to hear shmuzin. You have to hear ashkafas. You have to understand how people look at things. How bnei Torah, how chashuv bnei Torah look at things. And otherwise we're lost. Otherwise we're lost. This is a closing thought on Hanukkah. Rabbi said, "This is the Torah is the or, right? The right. Everyone says, you know, Hanukkah is made for drush. So you know, it's by us, it's challenging yontif. But you know, if you go by the ma'at min ha'or is docha harbin min ha'choshech. You know, you light one candle, ne'erishu beis. That's all you need, me'ikar adin. Right? In a dark night, all you need is one candle. But you need that candle. You need that candle. That you have to have." Right, you have to have the aura of Torah, the aura of legitimate Torah, of sincere Torah, of emistic Torah. A person has to have that, and for this reason, we have to apply ourselves. A newsman, a person should be excited about it and say, "Oh my gosh! Now, when's Purim?" Right, the official countdown. I'm announcing it right now. Okay, here it is. The official Purim countdown has begun. Okay, there's nothing left to look forward to. Right, you got Sar B'Tavis, not too much there. Right, so what do you got coming up here? Right, Tu B'Shvat, very Shvach. Well, winter and midwinter break. Okay, Purim, right? Wrong. What you have to look forward to is you're going to learn tomorrow. Tomorrow I'm going to get up and learn, and tomorrow I'm going to get closer, I'm going to get a greater understanding, I'm going to become a bigger bentara, incrementally, step by step, drop by drop. That's what I'm going to get. That's what I have to look forward to. I have the fact that I have now a couple of months that I'm going to be able to learn and become on my way to godless, on my way to be able to be a great person. Every person here could be a great person. You're so godly. Not every person could be Rav Eliashiv, that's for sure true, but every person could be a great person. Every person could be a great person, but you have to be a great person. You have to be exposed to emes. So this is what we need. This is our opportunity. We should take the opportunity going away from Hanukkah. Take the spirit. The spirit of Hanukkah goes with us. We take it, and amidst Hashem, we should have a meaningful zman starting from already today, but starting from continuing tomorrow. We should be excited about it and relish. I know it sounds very corny, but I'm going to say it anyway. That we should relish the opportunity to be here and to be able to learn.